This podcast is for information only and should not be considered legal advice. There is no representation that the legal services to be performed by LOCA are better than the services of other attorneys. There is no guarantee of the outcome. Success is rendered on a case-by-case basis. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tim Markley from K. Altman Law, and you are listening to the Legally Blind Justice Podcast. In this episode, we discuss the college disciplinary process. Too often, students get into trouble, think they can handle it, but you're going to be surprised to know that you might need help from an expert, and you might even need a lawyer. At K. Altman Law, we talked to hundreds of people who discovered that what they thought was not a big deal is a life-altering event. Students who thought they could work it out with the school are being expelled, suspended, placed on probation. This podcast will discuss those issues, tell you where to find help, and explain how the system works. So let's just start with a general overview of the college disciplinary process. Most colleges and universities have a set of processes and procedures that are outlined in their student handbook and in their student policy manuals. These processes may differ from school to school, but they follow a general pattern. So regardless of the nature of the offense, you are typically given some kind of written notice of the offense. That written notice will tell you what the charge is and provide you with some details regarding the accusation. Unfortunately, the amount of detail provided is often very sketchy and in some cases makes it difficult to know exactly what you're being accused of. In addition to outlining the charge and providing details, this notification typically provides some kind of explanation about what's going on. Depending upon the severity of the accusations, you may be faced with a meeting, having to write a formal appeal document, a hearing, or a formal investigation. And we'll talk more about these later on in this podcast. It's important to note, and I'll say this multiple times today, that colleges have these rules and regulations in place to protect themselves and ensure that the students are treated fairly. When all else fails, the college will always fall back on its rules and regulations to justify its actions and to guide it through the disciplinary matter. It's critical to note also, though, that you have due process rights during an investigation. These rights are outlined in the college handbook or somewhere in the college's rules and procedures. Now, there are various types of issues that can trigger student discipline. These generally fall into several categories, including academic misconduct, behavioral misconduct, violation of university policies, or conduct codes. Now, here are a few examples. Under academic misconduct, you could be accused of plagiarism, which is defined as presenting someone else's work as your own without proper citation. We see this one all the time. Another academic misconduct violation is cheating, using unauthorized materials, collaborating improperly, or accessing prohibited information during an exam or an assignment. We see this with programs like Quizlet, with Chegg, with ChatGPT, and other sources. Fabrication, falsifying data, or other information in academic work. We have seen this at the PhD level. And then collusion, unauthorized collaboration with others. We see this a lot on tests, especially in online tests, where students will be accused of getting answers from someone else. The next category, behavioral misconduct. Disruptive behaviors in class is a common one, such as repeatedly interrupting the professor, disrespectful behavior towards the instructor or peer, or causing some kind of disturbance in the classroom environment. Harassment or discrimination. This can be verbal, physical, sexual, race, gender, religion, or disability. The next group is the violation of university's policies or codes of conduct. Violations of campus rules, violating specific rules or regulations set forth by the university. This could include dorm rules, computer use policies, or parking regulations. Failure to comply with disciplinary procedures. We're seeing this one more and more, where students are assigned to discipline or is told about something going on, and they're not following the steps of the process. Remember what I said before. The university puts these rules in place to protect not only to protect themselves and to let you know what the process is. But if you skip the rules, don't follow the process, you're going to be falsely accused. Violations of community standards, actions deemed contrary to the values and norms of the university. We see this one a lot with fraternities and sororities during Pledge Week and actions that look a whole lot like hazing. Now, it's important to note that specific policies and procedures can vary between institutions. So that's the general note of what you can be accused of, and there's a whole lot more, but that's the main ones we see. What's the process for investigating that misconduct at a university? It can vary, as I've said before, between institutions, but they generally follow this similar pattern. There's the initial report or complaint. The process begins with a report submitted to the appropriate university official. This could come from faculty, staff, students, or another member of the university community. It could be the university police. Sometimes it doesn't even have to be a university person. If you do something off campus in the university town, that might get reported back to the university as well. Then there's typically a preliminary assessment. The university will do some kind of determination to see if there's enough information to warrant a further investigation. This involves gathering evidence, interviewing witnesses, or reviewing relevant documents. Then there's the notification to you, the accused. If the preliminary assessment indicates that further investigation is needed, you are typically notified in some way, emails, written, phone call to come meet with someone. Then they conduct a thorough investigation of the alleged misconduct. Now, depending upon how serious the allegation is, that thoroughness might not be as thorough as you would like it to be. Throughout the investigation, the university will typically ensure that your due process rights are being upheld. This includes the right to a fair and impartial process, the right to present evidence and witnesses on your behalf, and the right to be informed of specific allegations against you. Once they go through all of that, they will issue a decision and sanctions. Now, to get to that decisions and sanctions process, you might actually go to a student hearing. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But once the investigation is complete, like I said, they make a decision based on the evidence gathered. If you're found responsible, you're assigned sanctions. And these sanctions are wide-ranging, everything from a minor warning all the way up to expulsion. And then almost every university has some kind of appeals process that allows you to challenge the outcome of the investigation or the sanctions imposed. Now, the appeals process typically has specific deadlines and criteria for filing the appeal, and it may involve an impartial panel or administrative review. After you've done all the appeals, you get a final resolution. Again, it's important to note that specific procedures for investigating misconduct varies between the universities and colleges. And so you've got to make sure you read those policies carefully. And as I said before, those policies are there as much to protect the university as they are to protect you. A hearing is not uncommon. Typically, a hearing starts with a pre-hearing. Prior to the hearing, you're usually given an opportunity to review the evidence, prepare your defense, identify witnesses, consult with an advisor, or even a fraternity if it's allowed by university policy. Then they schedule the hearing, which will typically be on a date and time that works for both you and the university. That hearing could be in person, or more and more we're starting to see those hearings happen by Zoom or some other electronic means. The hearing panel typically has faculty members, staff, or administrators appointed by the university. In some cases, you may even see students included on a disciplinary board. The panel is supposed to be impartial and not have a prior relation with either you or the other person involved here. And you can typically exclude someone if there is that kind of conflict. You get to the hearing. They've got very laid out procedures. Typically, it's like this. This is the hearing board. Here are the members of the board. Here's what you're being accused of. Here are the rules. Here's the standard we're going to follow. And then you get an opening statement. They get to ask you questions. You get a closing statement. They might have a follow-up question, and then they're going to deliberate and issue a decision. Nearly every time, you won't find out that decision that day. They typically take some time to deliberate, then somebody has to write up their decision and the rationale. So it could be anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks before you find out the decisions. And you're typically notified in writing. And then, like I said, almost every time in the college or university, there's some kind of appeals process. Now, the appeals and the other steps along the way have deadlines. And too often, we see students who don't read the rules, don't know the rules, and miss deadlines. And when you miss a deadline, that's going to potentially negate, innocence or not. They're going to simply say, you didn't make the deadline. We've charged you with this. Sorry, we're not taking your appeal. So you've got to watch those deadlines. You get the final resolution and you move on. Possible outcomes. Some common outcomes, no action taken. The panel determines that there's not enough evidence to support the allegation or that the student is not responsible for the misconduct. You might get a warning or reprimand, which is just what it sounds. Typically a minor one. We see this sometimes with plagiarism among undergrads. They get a warning or a reprimand. You might get probation for a more serious offense. Suspension, which is can be anywhere from a semester to a full year to even longer. It might see an expulsion. And this is the most severe one, where they basically say, you're done here as a student, and you have no right to reapply. Expulsion is reserved typically for the most serious offenses, such as violence, academic dishonesty of multiple times, behavior that poses a risk to the safety or well-being of others, and is often seen in Title IX hearings. You might get restorative measures. In some cases, you might have to do some community service. You might have to go see a counselor. So that's the range of sanctions, and there are even some that we haven't listed that may happen. But one of the things you got to know when it comes to this is that when reviewing this, is they have something called the standard of evidence that they're using here. Now, you've all watched cop shows and lawyer shows where they talk about beyond a reasonable doubt. Colleges, they don't work at that high bar. They work typically at something called the preponderance of the evidence. That means I look at the evidence, I weigh it, and if I think one side is even a feather's weight more than the other side, I can find you responsible. So these, a lot of he said, she said kind of events can trigger that preponderance of evidence standard. It's not a very high bar to cross. So you've got to be careful when you're going into these kinds of matters. Now, you do have rights. Students at colleges and universities have certain rights. You're protected by law and institutional policies. You typically have what's called due process rights. That means they're going to try to treat you fair and impartially in the disciplinary process. It doesn't always look like it's happening that way. If you're dealing with a Title IX offense and you're the person being accused, oftentimes you are removed from the school, and there are no contact orders put in place, and it really looks like it's weighted against you as the respondent. Let's look at a couple of case studies, kind of hybrids of various different cases. So Sarah, sophomore majoring in English, she submits a research paper for her literature class. Upon her review, the professor discovers there are significant portions of the paper are copied from online sources. This is very common. The professor reports the incident to the Academic Integrity Office alleging plagiarism. Sarah is notified of the allegation, provided with an opportunity to respond. After a thorough investigation, including a review of the paper and online sources, the university's disciplinary panel determines that Sarah violated the academic plagiarism policy. She receives a sanction of academic probation and is required to attend a workshop on academic integrity. She's also given a failing grade on the paper, but is allowed to resubmit it for partial credit.
That's a typical plagiarism process. Now, case two, underage drinking. John's a freshman, lives in the dorms, and he's found intoxicated in the hallway during a routine check by one of the RAs. Upon further investigation, it's discovered that John, who is under the legal aid, had been drinking with several of his friends in his room. Now, John's referred to the conduct office for violating the campus policy. He's provided with notice of the allegations and given an opportunity to explain his actions. Witnesses were his roommates and the campus security officer, each of whom provided statements during the investigation. So John is found responsible, required to attend alcohol education classes, and complete community service hours. Additionally, since he's underage, his parents are notified of the incident, as is the university policy. A more serious type of case, it's a Title IX case, because in this case, you're not only violating school rules, but there are federal laws involved as well. And these are federal Title IX requirements. And these typically can involve student on student, student on teacher. So let's look at Emily, a sophomore majoring in political science at a large university. She is actively involved. She's in student government and known for her leadership skills. One day, Emily confides to her friend that she's been experiencing some unwelcome advances from one of her professors who teaches a required course in her major. She describes the incidences where the professor made suggestive remarks about her appearance and offered her special favors in exchange for personal favors. Well, she reported the incident to the friend, and Emily and Sarah encourages Emily to report the incident to the university's Title IX office. Emily files a formal complaint alleging sexual harassment by the professor. The Title IX officer conducts an initial assessment of the complaint, determined that it warrants further investigation based on the seriousness of the allegation and the potential violations of Title IX. The university's Title IX investigator interviews Emily, Sarah, and other witnesses who may have relevant information. They also gather any documentation or evidence, such as emails or text messages. The investigator puts in place what are called interim measures. These measures are designed to ensure Emily's safety and well-being. They provide academic accommodations, they change her class schedule, and they issue a no-contact order between Emily and the professor. The Title IX officer also interviews the professor and gathers any evidence that he may have. So after completing the investigation, the Title IX officer presents the findings to a hearing officer. Both Emily and Professor Smith have the opportunity to present their sides and respond to the evidence presented. Now, under Title IX, there are specific rules for this. You have an advisor. That advisor can ask questions of the other party, as well as ask questions of the witness. So based on the evidence and testimony presented, the hearing panel determines that the professor engaged in conduct that violated Title IX. And remember, the standard for this hearing is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's going to most likely be preponderance of the evidence. The committee then issues a sanctions letter. Sanctions may include termination, suspension, or other disciplinary action. The professor is provided an appeals process and has the right to appeal the decision if they believe there are procedural errors or unfair treatment during the process. If Professor Smith had been found not responsible, Emily could have also filed an appeal and taken this back for a review. That leads to the resolution. The university's decision is considered final, and sanctions are imposed after the appeals process. All right, now let's talk about navigating this college disciplinary process. The first thing to do is know your rights. Know what your rights are as a student, to include your due process rights, privacy rights, particularly your right to appeal. Understanding these rights can help you navigate this process and ensure that you're treated fairly. Next, read and understand the policies. If you need someone to help you with this, that's fine. Take the time to review the handbook, code of conduct, disciplinary process. knowing these rules and how those regulations govern you can help you avoid potential violations. Next, seek guidance and support. These are complicated rules. We've talked about this before. They're in place to protect you, but they're also there to protect the college. So if you're facing a disciplinary action, don't hesitate to seek support from a trusted source, student advisor, faculty member, or legal expert. These individuals can provide valuable advice and assistance throughout the process. Next, respond promptly and cooperate. If you receive a notice of allegation or investigation, respond to it. And as much as possible, cooperate with university officials. Provide honest and complete information. But do that after you've talked to someone. Also, check those dates. You don't want to be caught missing a deadline and having your appeal kicked out. Prepare your defense. Don't walk in and think you're just going to handle it. It doesn't work that way. Take time to prepare your defense thoroughly. Gather evidence. Identify witnesses. Consult with a legal counsel if necessary. Presenting a strong defense can help you advocate for yourself. Attend hearings and appeals. If you're required to go to these hearings, show up, be on time, dress professionally, and then present your case clearly and respectfully. Take advantage of any opportunity to present evidence or call witnesses. Maintain professionalism and respect. I know that sometimes you're angry at the school and you think they've done you wrong. But throughout the disciplinary process, you've got to maintain professionalism. You've got to show respect for these university officials. You want to avoid engaging in confrontational and disruptive behavior. This undermines your credibility. And this process is all about credibility. Stay informed. Know what's going on in your case. If there's a long gap, it's okay to say, "Can you give me an update?" Keep track of those deadlines. I can't say this enough. Make sure you submit stuff when you're supposed to, and make sure you comply with all the procedural requirements. So let me wrap up by saying, navigating the college disciplinary process can be a challenging and stressful experience for students. However, by understanding your rights, seeking guidance and support, and preparing an effective defense, you improve the chances of a fair and equitable outcome. It's essential to approach the process with professionalism, respect, while also advocating for yourself and being assertive. Stay informed, know your deadline, stay engaged. And remember, the school or university has complex rules, policies, and procedures that govern this process. They also have a legal staff to advise them. And you should as well. You need experienced help to get the results that you need. Trust a firm such as K. Altman Law to guide you through the legal minefield and get the result that you want. So thanks once again for listening to the Legally Blind Justice Podcast. If you have a legal question, give us a call at 1-516-788-8963 or check us out on the web at kaltmanlaw.com.